From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, it's the Mark Haney Show, and we are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we do that in a few ways, but one of the key ways that we do that is by building the Backyard Advantage, the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And it hit me the other day that part of this, part of my personality, part of my makeup is always trying to create an advantage, a cheat code. I've done that since my newspaper route when I was a little kid, always trying to figure out my own little secret sauce. I've done it with video stores, security cameras, just everything I do. Maybe it's being maybe less able than many. I better create myself this little advantage. And this advantage that we're building for entrepreneurs in Sacramento is sort of part of that scheme. But I think we're going to kind of tweak our show to be talking more about how people have built their businesses and how they've hopefully created an advantage. Typically, the most successful people I know kind of have a way that they did it. So today I'm here with Udi Carrasco. He is a guy that has a business that has grown rapidly over the last several years. He's part of the Entrepreneurs Organization, and we'll get into his business, and it's all around helping other business people and entrepreneurs in and around tax credits and kind of programs that the government lays out there for us, but they're oftentimes kind of complicated. So with that said, I'm going to turn it over to Udi Carrasco, and welcome to the show, my man.
Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here.
I appreciate you being here. Well, maybe just for our audience who may not know you, a little bit of your background and maybe the journey into entrepreneurship.
Great. Yeah. And you speak about your time as paper routes and all that. I kind of was cut from that cloth as well. So ever since I was a kid, you know, grew up, as I was saying, in Dixon, and, you know, came from a migrant family. So we were, mom and dad instilled a very strong work ethic from the get-go. And so ever since I can remember, I was always trying to make money for the household and for myself and different jobs. I think I've had 30 plus jobs in my time.
Okay, what was your first one?
Oh man, yeah, you're really laying it on right
first,
away.
First one where you actually got paid something,
correct?
Right? And not mom and dad told you to do something for free.
This is embarrassing, but yeah, I got paid to be a pooper scooper at the Dixon Street Fair, where we'd follow horses basically and pick up after them.
Love
but it. You know what though? It was nice to get that money in the pocket and to realize that if you put a little effort, you know, you can get a little money for it. And so,
well, you said make money for the household. Were you asked to give some of that money to help pay the bills around the house?
Oh, yeah, for
oh,
sure.
Wow.
Yeah. Grew up in a family, Hispanic family, and family of nine total, so seven kids. And so, yeah, in order to make ends meet as a migrant family, you know, we needed to work. And part of that, a large part of that, was to go to help pay the bills and, you know, whatever my parents thought was righteous to leave for us. That's what they did. So, yeah. So it was, but it also showed us, I think, as kids, how to contribute to a bigger cause than you know, something to put in our pockets, if you will.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. So from pooper scooper to obviously entrepreneur and highly successful entrepreneur, yes. Maybe just keep us going through this journey, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, I think I always had the bug, so to speak, right? The entrepreneurial bug. Ever since I was a kid, you know, we ended up doing a paper route at 14 years old. And then lo and behold, next thing you know, I realized that instead of delivering papers for making whatever I was making, there was actually another way I could make money through the paper route, which was going out and soliciting for new subscriptions, mm-hmm. right? And by doing so, I was making significantly more money and I was enjoying it, right? I was getting in front of people and get an opportunity to, you know, sell a little bit, even
put
at
your
that
little
age.
Spin on the
correct.
On the business. They called those starts back in the day. I remember, at least
oh,
in my world, they say, like, hey, you got to start, add a value to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember one offering I used to deliver for the Sacramento Bee, right? Mm-hmm. And one offering they had was this kind of 30-day money-back guarantee, well, that was like music to my ears, right? Yeah. Because I could sell that like hotcakes. So, and we would go out, we'd go crew, they call it crewing, we'd crew around Davis and we crew around other areas.
Okay, you went outside of your whatever route territory and started selling.
Correct.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they would give us out these scratchers that could be anywhere between $3 to $100 every time you got a subscription. So anyway, it really, you know, kind of wet my palate for what it would take to be, you know, an entrepreneur and to actually go out and do it on your own and not just rely on someone cutting you a check, if you will. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where it all started. And then as I worked my way through college, I went to Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo, multiple jobs there as well. And then I started my career out at KPMG in the Silicon Valley, you know, right out of college, and was doing audit work for them, for big companies like Apple Computers and that type of deal in the Silicon Valley. And then lo and behold, my wife at the time and I got pregnant with our eldest daughter, now is 22. So we moved back to Sacramento and I asked for a transfer into the KPMG tax department, where they stuck me in the business incentives group, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where I kind of caught fire a little bit, right? I kind of got a feel for how entrepreneurial that side of the business was. All of a sudden, I could offer up a service that was all, you know, fee-based off of whatever results I brought. So okay. It's contingent, effectively.
Instead of just getting paid X number of dollars per hour, you know, your billing rate, and you're just working 90 hours a week, bill. I see how these guys work. You now could almost create your own little business where there's less limitation, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, man. And so sure enough, you know, I got my CPA license. Literally the day I got my CPA license, made a decision and I went into my managing partner's office and let him know that, you know, this was it for me.
Thanks for the training.
It's time to go sow my oats. So, you know, that was, I guess, 2003. So here we are 21 years later, something like that. And been now running a practice. There's almost 20 of us at the firm now that work with the firm in some capacity. And our focus is in tax credits and incentives. So essentially it's all this stuff that I call heart surgery of the tax world, right? Stuff that's an inch wide and a mile deep, so to speak, that quite frankly requires, you know, specialization, right? You need mm-hmm. to be laser focused on these things, for one, to maximize the benefit to the client, but for two, to also cover your tail when the IRS or the state of California or any other state for that matter knock on your door and want to see the support as to why it is that you're using all these programs to save you tax or to get money back, et cetera.
Yeah, so the nuanced aspect of this, I guess, has the general CPA shying away. Even the general tax professional might shy away and lean on someone like yourself, right, that has, you know, the deeper understanding of this stuff. And, you know, you say, you know, you talk about defending it. How often are some of these things, I guess, scrutinized by, who scrutinizes it? The IRS?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
IRS. And
state, I mean, governments?
Yeah, 100%. You know, a lot of the programs that we work on are tax-based, right? But some are what I call incentive-based. So more of like the training grants that are reimbursable monies, if you will, for training your employees in California. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, all of these, you know, agencies or governmental entities, if you will, all of them have some sort of audit function where they're going to verify that you actually did do the things you were supposed to do to qualify for this as a taxpayer, mm-hmm. if you will. Right now, you know, big is the employee retention credit, right? And all these audits are coming down the pike right now where the IRS is absolutely saying, hey, we're going to open up the hood here and we're going to make sure that you didn't just write down a number, that instead you did follow the qualification parameters, right? And if you didn't do it, you know, they have a stick for that as well, right, where they can penalize you.
Yeah, okay, I know you have a few different categories or a few different focus areas. The ERC, we've all heard a lot about that. People are even advertising on the radio. You see it all the time. Right. You know, we'll make sure we get a bunch of money back and is that kind of, are we at the end of that cycle now?
Yeah, good question. And the short answer is yes. Okay. You know, there is, I mean, whatever we consider short, but 2020 had kind of a sunset timeframe of April of this year, 2024, meaning that after April 2024, you can no longer request retroactively the 2020 quarters for the employee retention credit. Okay. So that kind of sunsets, right? Similarly, for 2021's quarters, you only have until April of 2025 as the rule stands right now. That said, even as we speak, there's proposed legislation that is looking to essentially remove the program early. So make it such where people that have not yet done their ERC, for that matter, not done it correctly, they are not able to go and grab those dollars anymore because they're basically going to turn the faucet off.
Okay.
And that...
Did they run out of money? Are they running out of money? Or they just feel like the... kind of the impact is so far behind us.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about paying people for 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Is that really practical?
Yeah.
Is that a practical way to spend our tax dollars?
Yeah. You're sniffing it out, Mark. You could tell that, as you know a little bit about this, but IRS came out at one point, this is probably about a year ago, and said that when they first effectively came out with the Employee Retention Credit Program, you know, they expected X amount of requests for refunds. And what ensued was an absolute tsunami of, you know, requests for these refunds. And unfortunately, it was consulting firms that I joke. I had one guy that was the year before was in the painting business. And the following year when I called him, his voicemail said, you know, he was part of an ERC, a firm, if you will. And I'm like, how in the world did you go from being a painter
it's
to
like,
being
selling starts for the Sacramento Bee? Hey, yeah. You know, if it pays, you go there, right?
Absolutely.
I don't need to paint when I can go sell ERC consulting.
It's just it was a shiny object in the water, right? And yeah. So the reality is that the IRS is, you know, running out of money. I don't think they ever counted on so many refund requests. So yes, this is absolutely costs way more than they anticipated. Mm. But I think probably more importantly is the fraudulent claims that came in for ERC, where they were basically claims that just had no merit to it. There was no qualification behind it. There was no analysis behind it. There's no support for that matter. And with that, the IRS has just said enough is enough, right? Mm-hmm. We can't continue to just let this happen. So that's why the ERC buzz has quieted down, right?
Okay. So now a firm like yours with all the, you know, the accounting background and the CPA certifications, do you provide some sort of, I guess, assurance? Do you protect them in the event of an audit? How does that work?
Yeah, really good question. I appreciate that, because that's honestly one of our biggest selling points as a firm, is that, you know, we tout ourselves as the firm that's going to dot the I's and cross the T's, right? And so I tell prospective clients all the time, hey, I'm happy to work with you, but just be aware, I'm also very happy telling you no if you don't qualify, mm-hmm. right? Because there's just plenty of money out there to go get legitimately that you don't need to be extra aggressive. And what we do is can put our money where our mouth is. So our engagements very clearly stipulate that whatever we find you, we as CPAs must defend you at no additional cost through the life of the statute of limitations, where the IRS or the states can come back and do some clawback. We have to represent you at no additional cost, right?
Wow.
And happy to report, and it's kind of, you know, wear this like a badge of honor, but in 21 years, the only adjustment we've ever had to any of our analysis and credit studies has been a positive adjustment, negative adjustment, right? And it's not because, you know, we're hard-nosed in an audit room, not at all. It's because we're going in and, again, dotting the I's and crossing the T's to make sure we maximize for the client. But at the same time, don't get over here throwing Hail Mary passes that are just never going to get recouped, right?
Right.
So that language in our contracts of we support you, no additional cost for the life of the statute. And the one thing that I know we also have in there that I've never seen in any other engagement of any other consultant is that in the event that you're my first client ever that gets negatively adjusted in an audit, I have to give you our feedback to you.
Okay.
So it's kind of rocking in that same boat, if you will, that, hey, we're going to do what's best for you. Sure. And God forbid, maybe it's just an error. Forget that it's like anything that we're doing too aggressively or whatever. It's just an error. If you get adjusted, you're going to get the money back from us anyway, mm-hmm. right? For our fee of mm-hmm. it. So it's really a very honest and straightforward type of relationship
yeah,
and
I
arrangement.
I think that that builds a lot of trust. Just knowing that, exactly. getting into it, you know, you're okay, this feels like, doesn't feel like a scam. Because in some ways, some of this government money, it almost feels too good to be true.
Absolutely.
And it's like, really? I'm used to only paying taxes. Now I find these ways, these programs to get my money back. But I keep thinking about a business like yours that, you know, there's only so many programs, I suppose, that it really yeah. makes sense to have a focus on. Do you have like two or three or four that like are your main focus? The ERC, obviously, it was big. It's mm-hmm. there's still something there. What else is like that in terms of, you know, yeah. Pretty meaningful for a business owner?
Absolutely. So you'd be actually shocked how many of these programs are available. We offer up about 9 different service like lines, if you want to call it that, for what clients can do to offset tax, whether that's, you know, again, a way to reduce your net income or actual credits to offset true tax liability. For starters, we have on the federal side, we got a credit called the Work Opportunity Tax Credit. Basically, you're getting a reward, so to speak, for hiring folks that meet certain demographics, right? Mm-hmm. So if you, like, for example, I have a lot of business in San Diego because I live part-time in La Jolla. And the folks over there, that's a big, big military community, right?
Right.
So one of the qualifying criteria for this Work Opportunity Tax Credit is if you were previously a veteran before you went to work for this employer, right? So if an employer hires you and you're a veteran, right, then at that point, the employer gets up to a $9,600 tax benefit, right, dollar for dollar on the federal side for hiring that employee, right? So that's just one, right? Oh, that's on the federal
side. And I remember talking to you about this. I forgot about it till right now, but we have an enormous pool of people that are in the military about ready to get out,
yeah.
and then we sort of help them through that transition process, yeah. and it makes me wonder, you know, I need to connect you up to my son, Marcus, and sure. maybe there's alignment there that,
absolutely.
You know, some of your clients could be recipients of these, you know, I call it America's finest workforce, all these military veterans coming out looking for, you know,
yeah.
looking, they're still, most of them are still, they're in their prime.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then a lot of them are, you know, bless their heart, they're very disciplined too. I mean, I kind of piggybacking or double downing on the federal program. The state of California has a program called the New Employment Credit, which I believe is honestly one of the best kept secrets out there. To be fair, you have to be in a certain area called mm-hmm. the designated geographic area of California. That said, it's worth currently up to $116,000 per employee over a 5-year period of time in tax wow. credits, tax reduction at the California side, which, as we all know, is one of the highest tax states, right? So if you're not doing this program, you know, you talk about veterans, a veteran would qualify you. And again, I'm kind of, you know, 10,000 foot view on this deal, but on the federal and the state combined, you're almost at $125,000 or so in tax reduction if the guy runs out the entire clock.
Wow, that's interesting. So yeah. move your business, locate your business to one of these zones and hire a bunch of veterans because you're going to have good employees.
Yeah, you might not pay tax for a while that way.
Wow.
So,
okay, so yeah. that's cool. That's a cool one. And that one relates to something that, you know, that I'm working on, that I'm passionate yeah. about. Okay, so what else are there?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, another one that's kind of, I feel it's a little bit of the best kept secret too is an incentive, actually. It's a training reimbursement that you could get here in California called the Employment Training Panel Program. And you don't have to be in a designated area for any of this, right? They do, to be fair, prefer certain industries. Manufacturing is typically a preferred industry. Construction can be a preferred industry. But there's also other industries that can get a little bit of the action, so to speak. In fact, I was just at a client today that we ended up securing an award for about $250,000 for them in training reimbursements, right? Mm-hmm. And again, the idea is that California wants to create a pool of employees that are kind of higher skilled labor. So if you're spending your hard-earned dollars as a business on wages while you're training these employees, right? California is rewarding you by allowing you these grants.
You know what? That makes a lot of sense because especially, let's say I own a construction company too, sure. But no matter what kind of company you own or run, there's a certain amount of it that goes into training, right?
Absolutely.
You've got, especially you get new employees or even existing employees, they need to be trained. They need to grow their skill set. And if you could modify your training programs to fit within the California program, then you can get this nice reimbursement. My question about that is, like, how much do people typically have to tweak their program? You know, we have mutual buddies that own construction companies. Yeah, they're doing training, but how close is it to what the requirements are for California? Can they make extra money doing this?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I think with a lot of these programs, what ends up happening is we have kind of perfected the system for implementation within the clients, such that once we get in there, we do a lot of hand holding in the beginning. But once, you know, we get through our onboarding, so to speak, of these clients, it's really set it and forget it, right?
Okay.
To the training program, really all the employees need to do is, you know, truthfully sign a roster that essentially says, yes, I did have safety training, or I did have this, you know, tailgate training, or I did go through formal training, whatever it may be. Really, all that the state of California wants is evidence that you did do what you said you were going to do. Mm-hmm. And they obviously don't have a camera within, you know, each business to monitor what's going on. So they use the roster signatures as a way to validate, so to speak, right, that you're doing what you're supposed to do, right?
Yeah.
And so the you know, long-winded answer, sorry about that, is really more that the implementation within the business that's our kind of our secret sauce. That's what we do, right? We created for the tax credits, the hiring credits, we created a proprietary software web-based tool that actually expedites all this information gathering. And then it even communicates with some of the government agencies to make sure that we do all this stuff timely.
Okay, so let's dive into that because, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, this is all around creating the secret sauce or the cheat code, if you will, really creating yourself an advantage that maybe other people aren't thinking of. So how did you, let's walk into that. So you are you're creating more of a turnkey program in terms of this training where you don't actually go and do the training, but you've built the system that makes it really easy for them to do the training. What prompted that? And like, that didn't happen on the first day you opened the business, right?
Yeah, no, it sure didn't, right? I mean, because a lot of that programming costs a fair amount of money, right?
So So what goes into the mind of, like, how do you discover that? Did you already know I got to create myself an advantage or?
Yeah. Well, I think it was out of necessity, right? Mm. And what I mean by that is, you know, some of these programs have very strict time frames from the time that you sign a client, right? So for example, the hiring credits for the work opportunity, as well as the state new employment credit that we just talked about, the federal program only gives you 28 days from the time you hire an employee to the time we have to go get a certificate from the IRS, essentially, or submit for a certificate, I should say. You get 28 days total, right? Mm. And so because of that, we're like, wait a second. If we wait on paper shuffling, you know, HR at the client to get us all the paper and mail it to us or even scan it and send it, this is going to take forever. Right. And we're never going to beat that 28-day deadline to submit on our end. So what we did is we got with, some programmers and we created a software around that. Right. Mm. So now our clients, they receive login credentials, super secure. through our software. It's called credit management software. And when we bring on a client, they receive credentials to access it. It's their own account. And as employees are being hired, they could take the surveys, right, on their own smartphone, or maybe they have a kiosk machine, and everything essentially rolls up to that software, which then communicates, you know, to get those certifications. Yeah.
So the HR people or the admin people at the employer, they're not bogged down in BS.
Correct. Not a bunch of paper shuffling around back and forth and this and that. Now, to be fair, we can customize even with that's the nice thing about running a smaller firm is that we can be nimble, right? So there are clients that go, hey, I don't want a set it and forget it, right? Or maybe they hire a lot of Spanish speaking folks. Mm. I got folks on my team that are fluent in Spanish. And for some of those folks, we'll actually reach out to their employees and have dialogue and do a screening kind of over the phone. And what ends up happening is that increases the qualification rate because the employee is actually being talked to somebody who knows the program, yes, right? And yes, can put them at ease. This does not affect them. There's no HR issues here, nothing, right? Next thing you know, these guys are qualifying for tons of tax credits and offsetting tax liabilities.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, I know one of the ones that you work on, one of the programs that you help entrepreneurs with, yep, is the R&D tax credit. And absolutely, so we deal in the tech community at some level, and yep, everybody's, even if you're not a tech company, everybody's a tech company at some level if you're successful. Absolutely. So you are putting some money into R&D. Yeah. How does that work, and is how popular is that in terms of, you know, all this stuff that you work on?
Yeah, really good question. So the answer is it's very popular, and I would say it's every year it seems to be becoming more popular. All things considered, back in the day when R&D first came out, right, it was effectively kind of reserved for guys in white lab coats, right? Mm. I mean, that's how it was kind of seen. But what ended up happening is over time, you know, guys like myself that work in the tax credit world would go and take a company that maybe doesn't exactly fit the profile, but then you review the IRS's rules, what we call the four-part test for qualification of the R&D. And we go, oh, okay, well, you know, even though you're a mechanical contractor, you have some projects, if you will, that fit the four-part test, right? And so if they fit the four-part test, I can then feel comfortable having, you know, the credit ran. The CPA then can put it on the tax return. And let's just say, for the sake of argument, that the IRS calls it out. The IRS calls it out, then we kind of effectually go and argue whether we're right or they're right, right? If we win, now we've established case law, mm-hmm, which means that the next mechanical contractor that I go get, I can point to that ruling, so to speak, and say, hey, if it was allowed for them, we're doing the same thing over here. You know, it's allowed for these, mm-hmm, guys too. So over the course of time, what's developed is a ton of this case law, right? So, you know, R&D can be huge. I mean, it's an income tax credit, both on the federal and at the state level here in California, right? And so, you know, what I call a little bit of a double dip credit, right? Now, recently, I will say, though, there's been some little bit of an uproar due to what are called the 174 expenses. Not to get too much in the weeds on this, but effectively, there's now an analysis that needs to happen more than ever by a professional when you're doing an R&D study to see if it quote unquote pencils, if you will. Okay. Right? And so there's just so many nuances to the R&D. But, you know, the answer is yes, many clients qualify for R&D now that you never thought would qualify before. And as long as it's defendable and you can support it, then we're great, right? But you do need somebody that knows about all the moving parts, because otherwise, under review, and these things get reviewed all the time, you could get yourself in some trouble.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe let's do one or two more of the popular ones, or yep, stuff that you think might be really helpful for, sure, our audience.
Yeah, absolutely. So the other one that's really, really big is the cost segregation, right?
Oh, okay.
Cost segregation studies are something that we've been doing just a ton of.
Is that predominantly in real estate, or where is that?
Yeah, good question. So the short answer is yes. So, you know, take a building, if you were to buy a building as a business, right? You know, we all know that's a pretty good asset, especially in California with prices always going up, right? And just to put it in as an example, right? Say you bought a building for $3.9 million. I use that number because the useful life per IRS is 39 years. So if you do the math on that pretty easily, you get $100,000 in depreciation that you get to put on your tax return and reduce depreciation down by that $100,000, right? Year after year after year for 39 years. But what if we went into the building and instead compartmentalize or segmented out the various components of the building, right? In doing so, maybe we push useful lives of some of these components to 15 years, right?
The HVAC is not going to last 39 years.
You nailed it, right? So then all of a sudden you're pushing all this money forward for a depreciation sake, and you take maybe the first year depreciation of that 3.9, maybe you take a full million out of that instead of waiting for it. Well, what does that do? That puts money in your pocket, time value money. The banks are paying, what, 5.5-6% almost right now? I mean, that's could be a big number, especially for a lot of these guys that are doing just a ton of real estate, if you will. So so it's really a nice little, you know, addition, if you will, that you can get a nice reduction. And for some folks, I'll tell you honestly, in 2023, maybe it was a little bit of a slowdown, but 2022 was a screaming year for people, right? We got a bunch of PPP money. We got a bunch of this ERC money. And most of these businesses were still working off back pipelines, and they were essential. So most people, honestly, in 2022 and 2023 crushed it. They just did great, right? Yeah. So then all of a sudden, they're buying assets, right? Why not cost segum and then turn around and be able to take that deduction?
Yeah, a lot of people had really good years even throughout this, you know, throughout the pandemic crisis and, you know, all this worry. They stayed busy, but yet then they got these, they got all these, all this tax money back or all these PPP money back and, or back given to them. So yeah, it was kind of interesting. Double whammy where there's some silver lining in it where the government just started printing money.
Yeah.
Well, we'll take it. I mean, you're not used to that. So I think, you know, we're used to.
Yeah, you never say no, man.
Said no to any PPP money, PPP money.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've had this, this incredible success, and I think it's, really, people want to know what that's like. You and I were talking prior. You know, you've got a home in La Jolla. You've got another home here. You come from this immigrant family, right, where you're helping pay the bills as a little kid. And then you have this incredible success, multiple homes. How many memberships of golf do you got? Like, I don't know, how many country club memberships? Martis Camp House, which is like one of the nicest areas in the world, really. It's right down there. It's in Tahoe. What's that? I mean, from going from like nothing to this, I mean, walk me through. Do you pinch yourself? I mean, what happens? How does that?
I appreciate that. That's a really cool story. I feel.
I guess it's proof anybody can do it, right? No matter where you came from.
Yeah. That's exactly kind of the takeaway. I think, to be frank with you, I mean, the reality is that I feel very blessed to have had an opportunity. To at least have a shot at doing what I'm doing, right? Of course, it takes hard work. It takes effort. It takes commitment and that whole deal. Of course it does, right? But I always look back at my roots, you know, with my dad, may he rest in peace, and my mom, and the way they brought us up was, hey, you know, you got to get out there. You got to grind it out, you know? And it was really a continuous push on us to make sure we were constantly, overachieving to some degree, but not in a bad way, right? They just wanted to keep setting the bar for us a little bit higher, right? And so, I don't know, that always just stuck with me. And since then, I've really enjoyed, you know, raising the bar consistently. And so that's what keeps happening, I think, for me and in my business life is once we hit a certain level and I'm like, hey, we were able to do that. And there's this old adage that says, you know, I still remember the days where I longed for what I have now, right? For me, it's a little bit different because once I get there, I'm like, oh, if we could do that, we could do this, right? So,
well, a lot of people settle. I mean, can you teach that drive, or is it more innate or based upon early childhood experience? I wonder why some of my friends, business partners, have more of a mentality towards settle, right? We hit the number. I'm good. Right. Others are more like you, where like, oh, I was kind of surprised I got here, maybe at some level, or happy, but I want more.
Right.
Where can you teach that?
I think so. I honestly think it's at least my experience, if you will, has been it's been contagious around the people that I've been around. Right. You mentioned it earlier. Recently, I you know became involved with EO, the Entrepreneurs Organization, but even as a whole with my firm, honestly, and the folks that work at the office, you could just tell how excited they get as the firm is growing, right? And how they are contributors to that growth, right? So yeah, I think it's very teachable. I think that you just got to make a concerted effort as the student to be a sponge and be willing to learn. And then also as a teacher, you got to give it the time, right? You got to be able to be willing to break the time away to teach and to, you know, allow for these kind of aha moments of your, you know, staff or students or whatever you want to call it, so that they can have that same bug that you have and have it grow within them, right? Then once you got that going, I'll give you a perfect example. I got one of my guys today that got on a phone with a client and said, send me a text. He goes, I can't believe it. I just literally sold a client on another incentive that they weren't doing. So she was super excited, right? And I think that comes from, yeah, kind of the culture that we try to develop at the firm.
So, that's cool. Well, yeah. You mentioned EO. And as I think about why I like EO so much, I think it's some of what you just mentioned, the ability to put yourself in a room with people who are really driven. I know that makes me want something more for myself and makes me want to achieve when the people I'm spending my time around are achievement oriented. So from a takeaway there, I would say to anybody out there that wants to maybe feeling like, man, I've been kind of complacent, or I've been thinking about settling, or I've been settling, go put yourself around really driven people and just watch what happens to you over time. You end up changing in what I would consider a really good way. I feel like it's happened for me.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more there. You know, I'm a firm believer in energy, right? And so I think that when you bring the right energy and surround yourself with that same type of energy, almost on its own, amazing things happen, right?
And so, yeah. Well, a guy as busy as you too. So you got all this stuff going. You've got two little kids. You got twin children.
Boy, girl twins, yeah.
And you've still find time, obviously, to come on our show. Appreciate that. But you've been involved on the board of the Entrepreneurs Organization, which, did you ever see yourself doing that when you joined EO?
No.
You're like, I'm not going to be on some nonprofit board.
Yeah, no chance.
And now you're in a leadership role.
Yeah.
What prompted you to say, you know what, let me step up and help out. You know, I got to give back a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, I think that, you know, right out on the onset of EO, you know, I was very aware that I only wanted even to participate in EO if I could actually give something back, right? So as kind of my first year went, you know, I've always been a social guy, right? And again, back to the whole energy thing, I always like to bring good energy to wherever I'm at. And so I thought when, you know, the president asked me, hey, would you be interested in doing the EO membership role?
Was that
role?
Todd Ballenbach? Or
Todd
was it Todd
and Alex.
Alex, yeah.
It was
a team effort.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a team effort. But I honestly, and then Sean too, he's kind of rolling with me.
Sean Cook. He owns Cook Construction.
Yeah.
He's like my number one contractor on my home project.
Yeah, he's the best, man. He and I have been besties type of deal for a long time. So it was really the perfect time for me to be involved at the board. And we've done great, man. We've brought in some great people to EO that we're super proud of. But on top of that, what makes me the most proud is that I know how much they're getting out of it, right? Mm-hmm. I talk with them, I hear their stories, and they're just super enjoying it. I mean, just what it was 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago, we took a group up to Martis and did this kind of whole private skiing thing, and then followed by a phenomenal dinner at the lodge there at Martis Camp, and some of the guys that were there are recent adds to EO. So the camaraderie, and again, back to surrounding yourself with just positive business energy, it goes a long way.
Yeah. One of the things too, and this is going to sound a little bit like an entrepreneur's organization advertisement, which maybe it is, because I'm always promoting EO. It feels like, because they've had a big impact on me personally. But one of the things I appreciate about EO, and I think a lot of people do, and I wonder if some of those people that came to Martis Camp maybe experienced what I call a once in a lifetime type opportunity. You don't really know until you see Martis Camp is one example. We do some really cool once in a lifetime type opportunities, but when are you going to go to, if you don't have a buddy that owns a house in Martis Camp, you know, you're never going to even drive through that neighborhood probably. Right. So this is somebody that maybe, let's say you have a small company or smaller company, say it's a couple million in sales, you know, 2 to 10 million in sales. You're not going out there and, you know, getting a house in Martis Camp. That just doesn't happen like that. So, but you're still kind of curious about how the other half lives. And so you want to drive through. I used to get my inspiration as a kid. There was no Martis Camps like that when I was a kid, but I'd get my inspiration by driving through really nice neighborhoods. And man, someday I'm going to have that maybe, you know, type thing. So it is a... it is a good way to only to be inspired, but also do things you would have never done before. Absolutely. By being in NEO.
Yes, sir. No, I couldn't agree with you more. The oil events, right? Once in a lifetime events that we call it. And honestly, it's just been a treat, because I've met so many of the guys now in the San Diego chapter too. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, next, what is it, on the 10th, we're going to have a suite at Petco Park with a bunch of EO guys that we're seeing the Padres take on the Dodgers. And I mean, we just do all kinds of fun oil type of events, you know, that are just, you know, leave lasting memories.
One of the guys you mentioned, bring up baseball. One of the guys I was in EO with, there's an EO version for a little bit larger companies. And this guy owned the Padres. He was one of the owners of the Padres. Oh, wow. He sold his share and bought part of the Rockies. So we ended up going to Colorado and sitting in the boardroom because he's one of the owners of the Rockies. And we have our little meeting in the Rockies Stadium. It's like, just you do stuff. You're like, what? Yeah. Flying helicopters around. Anyway, this is an advertisement for EO. We love EO. We appreciate it. So you got the little kids that, you know, your wife is spend time. You got the nanny. Yeah. I'm wondering, I brought up the term cheat code at the beginning. I've got a glimpse into what the cheat code looks like for your business. But do you have like a cheat code for you that makes you able to juggle all this stuff?
Yeah,
and still be successful.
A very understanding wife.
That's
is the cheat code. No, I think honestly, I've been very blessed. You know, my daughter, my eldest daughter, who's 22, she's graduating from Sonoma State here in maybe about a month or two.
Nice.
Her name is Bella, but my wife Leah, who's been amazing and tremendous throughout this whole thing. And then our two little ones, Leo and Zoe, right? Honestly, they're my tranquility, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, the reality is that I've always been able to kind of compartmentalize a little bit my business life away from my personal life, and also, you know, my family life, such that I kind of grade myself, you know, honestly, almost on a daily basis, like, what grade am I giving myself in terms of energy I'm bringing to my business life today? What grade am I giving myself on my family life in terms of the energy I'm bringing to my family life today? And then personally as well in that kind of department. So if I had to say, you know, the cheat code is just as an accountant, as a CPA, my mind always goes to numbers, right? So if I can sit there and grade myself and say, hey, today I was 85% in my family life and I feel comfortable with that number, well, I'm winning there, right? And so we all have rough times as business owners. It's hard in the entrepreneurial world. So that's never going to feel like 100%. I'll tell you that right now, at least not for me, it hasn't, right? So if I can, you know, have a good grade, so to speak, in my family life, that is my tranquility for sure, man.
Yeah, it sounds like that compartmentalized mentality and the daily, or I don't know if it's daily grading, the regular grading of how you're doing. Yeah. That's super helpful. Now, what happens if you've got a bad grade, right? So like you kind of touched on, like, I was a bad student. What do you do if you got a bad grade?
Yeah. You don't want to be C's, get degrees type of deal, you know what I mean?
So. Yeah, not with you don't be getting C's with your two, twin kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, so, but that happens to all of us. So when you find yourself, let's call it out of balance or a bad grade in one of these compartments, do you have a way that you can self-correct? How do you do it?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, not just self-correct. I actually, I'm a big believer in communication solves a lot, right? So it's funny, I'm pretty transparent guy. So, I actually, this year, one of my goals was to be a better communicator. That was one of my New Year's resolutions. All the way across the board too, at work, at home, et cetera. So, through a referral actually from an EO friend of mine, I found this amazing counselor, right, who has been just instrumental thus far in helping through communication. So I lean on people that just know that world better than I do, so they can make me a better person, right? So to that end, I guess where I'm going with that is that the self-correction comes in the fact that if I'm giving myself a bad grade, I have tools to go and get my grade to be better, right? And that's not just, what I know to do, but also to go and bounce some things off of this counselor. And I'm no shame of that. I mean, I think that it's made me such a better communicator overall, mm-hmm. that the proof is in the pudding, man. So.
Yeah, I think especially guys my age, we grew up thinking I can do it myself, or maybe, asking for specific guidance might mean I'm weak. Well, we all get bad grades, and if you can get, you might as well go get the best coach, if you will, or the best therapist, whether it be CrossFit, yoga, business coach.
Correct.
Go get somebody that can help you to be the best. There's no shame in that. That's
right.
Like
100%.
Resourcefulness.
Exactly.
Okay, so last question. Any just closing thoughts, words of wisdom to people out here that aspire to achieve greatness in their life and in entrepreneurship? Any like maybe closing thoughts for them?
Yeah, at one point I went to an event with the author that wrote, Brian Tracy is his name. He wrote Maximum Achievement. It's a book that I read when I was young. And at the end of the presentation or his whole deal, his seminar, I went up to him and had a book signed. And I effectively asked him, I said, hey, and this is right when I was starting my business. I said, what couple of nuggets of advice could you give me that I'm just getting started, right? And I just need something to... not throw in the towel too early, or maybe throw it in when it's supposed to be thrown in. I don't know. Just give me something, right? And he's like, okay. He goes, well, I got two for you. And I've since kind of stole them, if you will, from him, or used them, I should say, because I think they were so good for me. And the first one he said is, every single day, if you're just talking about business, every single day, I don't care if it's like, a quick text or a quick email or a quick phone call, but do something. I don't care what it is for your business, right? And it's really more all those little like nuggets that you of effort, if you will, that you put in day after day after day, that eventually add up to one big, big thing, right? Mm-hmm. He goes, so if you can have the self-discipline, right, to do that, then next thing you know, you'll look backward and be like, oh my God, here I am, I've arrived, right? And I've always kind of leaned on that, right? Where if I feel like I'm having a tough time, if I feel like I'm struggling, I basically tell myself, you must do something for your business today, right?
I love it.
The second thing that he told me, which honestly, I was in shock that he had such kind of wisdom, and then I put it into play, and I was shocked that it worked. But he basically said, not everyone's money is green. I've been successful, Brian was saying this, I've been successful not for all the deals I made, but for all the deals I didn't take.
Mm.
He's like, be careful. You know, you could put yourself in a spot where all of a sudden you got a bucket of deals, but not very many of them are good, right? So you need to not change your stripes just to make that dollar. You have to always believe in what you do, always believe in your worth. And if you have to say no to a client, just say no. You're just leaving room for the next good client.
Yeah, and the mantra is not everybody's money is green. And that's easy to remember, right? And very impactful. Well, yeah. You were impactful on this show. Thank you for sharing these words of wisdom and, you know, all the general information around taxes, which we all want to try to minimize if we can. And what you do for the Entrepreneurs Organization, I appreciate it. Appreciate everything you're doing for the Sacramento business community as well.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to say thank you, obviously, for having me on the show. You're somebody I've always looked up to. Super proud to, you know, be an EO member with you and to call you a friend as well. And honestly, you've been a mentor. So keep up the good work, my friend. It's really showing.
Thanks, Udi.
Yep.
And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.